Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial. Pray the Lord I beat the case.
It is Wednesday, December 1st. Merry Christmas, Menace Nation. It is Christmas month. This is my favorite month of the year, and I'm sure it is everyone's outside. I don't know. Summer's pretty good. It's a lot nicer up here. But I'm excited, man. A lot of big things coming with this platform. So much growth. And this is what I envisioned when I decided to make this an actual platform and not just a podcast. Everything that's going on, man, is exactly what I hoped it would be. I mean, we're getting involved with the Zone 6 Fund that I'm going to keep talking about. It's our chance to scholarship inner city athletes to get high level training to try to get them to get scholarships, right? It's my way. Here's the way I look at it, Chris, is I could try to raise a ton of money and give a kid an actual scholarship, right, to college.
Yeah.
Right. That would probably cost what? Let's say he goes to Akron or Bowling Green. That's going to cost me, what, 40 grand probably for a 4-year scholarship at minimally, right? Or I can give a kid 4 grand, right, for 2 years. So 8 grand total, invest the time and the effort into getting him developed, and he can go get an athletic scholarship so that 8 grand is now sending a kid to college for 4 years, right? You do that, you know, five times. Now five kids are in college for what would have cost you one kid's tuition. So that's my dream and goal behind it. And already have had people donate, already have had people reach out about some sizable donations. So if you're interested in that, Zach at Menace to Sports. If you don't, you know, aren't interested in donating to it, that's fine. But if you do want to support still, we got our championship squares. Please, please, please get a square. It'll help us. I mean, 100% of this board is going to go into that fund. So that'll scholarship one kid if I can fill the board. I think I have 40 or 50 squares sold. So halfway there, the board's going to be live no matter what, even if we lose money or break even. I don't care. I just enjoy doing it. So you pay $100, Venmo to Cameron Media, no space, or just email me, Zach at Menace of Sports. You get a square. If the last digit of the winning score and losing score match up with your square, you can win. And minimally, at first quarter, you win your money back. Halftime, $125. Third quarter, $100. And then the final score, if you hit that, you win $300. You triple your money if you hit one final score. I put it out. We had 33 people win money on the Buckeye Square. So 33% chance to win money based on how that one went. Five games on Saturday, and then the three college football playoff games, plus the bonus Ohio State bowl game. A lot of chances to win, a lot of fun. It's a way for you to care about the Pac-12 championship game. So go ahead and help us out there. Quick other update. Fuck everybody else. I am now 4 winners in a row in parlays, which is unheard of. My Menace to Picks handicapping team has got me right. They give me some advice, but I'm picking this shit on my own. Huge parlay hit last night. The LeBronless Lakers, the Brooklyn Nets, and the Blue Jackets get taken down 100-0 by the Predators. So huge parlay hit. I hope you guys played along on MyBookie. If you don't know about MyBookie, promo code Menace and you get free deposit match. Whatever money you put in, they match it. So it's free money. But as I have learned from our handicapping team, Chris, there's a time to bet and a time to sit out, right? You have to be disciplined. And if I want to stay on this heater and I want to stay hot, I'm going to stay disciplined. I'm not playing anything today. I'm going to sit this one out. It's a Wednesday. I'm going to enjoy my day. I'm not going to bet anything. And then tomorrow we're coming out firing.
Let the hands go.
Let them go. Let them go. Big, big stacks. But anyways, let's get to college football current events and just what's going on in the world. Huge, huge fuck up by Lincoln Riley and his USC tenure already. What's it been, 2 days?
Yeah, already. So first of all, like, there's just been bombshell after bombshell. I mean, now we're going on the wildest probably 60 hours that I've seen in college football. And Lincoln Riley, you know, it's this is almost getting like documentary worthy, kind of what he's been, what he's got going on. So we're going to talk about the ranking at some point. They weren't very surprising to me. And it's funny because this Lincoln Riley stuff has overshadowed that, but here's what happened. So five-star corner, Damani Jackson, who is a big time target, big time kid that Ohio State wanted, Michigan. I mean, everybody wants him. Bama wants him, is a California kid. And one of the first things that Lincoln Riley did was blow him up as soon as he, you know, hopped on over to USC. Now, there is a coach still on OU's staff. His name is Roy Manning.
And I know Roy Manning. He was at Michigan for a while too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was. He's, you know, he's a well-respected absolute DB coach. So he had two in-home visits. And there was an article that came out, and they were talking about you know, this USC kid is probably going to go to USC, talking about kind of his recruitment process. And in this quote, he said, "I've heard from Grinch, who is at USC, and I've also heard from Roy Manning about USC. The issue is Roy is the DB coach at OU, Zach.
Bad deal.
That is not allowed." He's, I mean, recruiting.
It's a bad deal. So you think about this. He is on, you know, he's getting paid by Oklahoma. His mm-hmm. cell phone is paid for by Oklahoma. His travel is paid for by Oklahoma. He is on the clock 24 hours a day. That's what a coach is. There's no like, I'm off the clock now, I'm on the clock now. There's really only one time of the year where you're actually like, if you, it goes this far, right? Like if I created something, right? Let's say today, 9:21 a.m., I'm a coach at Ohio State or Oklahoma, and I create something. Doesn't matter what it is, right? If it's football oriented, Oklahoma or Ohio State, whoever you work for, owns the rights to that because you're technically working for them, right?
The and only a lot of times you're a state employee also.
Yeah, there's no doubt. The only time you're not, and I found this out because of how I created Zone 6 and how why I own it and why I have the rights to it, is because I created it on summer vacation. It's the only time you're technically not working for the university. So he is working for the university, and he is actively talking to a prospect for another school. This is a big, big, big problem for mm-hmm. USC. And I honestly think the only way out of it is to not hire him at USC. Because yeah. now if Lincoln Riley hasn't hired him, he hasn't officially hired him. Obviously, the guy works for Oklahoma. If Lincoln Riley hires him, that's tampering. It's going to be a big violation for him to start his USC tenure. So I think the only option is to not hire Roy Manning. Because then if you don't, you have plausible deniability. You can say, oh, I wasn't going to bring him. Like he just must have thought I was going to bring him, and he was talking to this kid on his own. I didn't instruct him to do that or whatever. You can, you know, kind of go palms up and go, what? I don't know what he was doing. I didn't hire him, right?
Well, the one of the bigger issues is it wasn't just a conversation with Roy Manning. There are text messages between Jackson and Roy Manning, which yeah. to me becomes a bigger, bigger issue because obviously as a state employee at OU, I mean, those text messages can get released. I mean, you know that firsthand. He was Roy Manning, the DB coach at OU. I've been texting back and forth with Coach Manning, and this is what OU went and did then. You know, their social media team, the OU compliance team, did the little eye emoji. Now, for those of you who don't know, something that Lincoln Riley had been doing since he became the head coach at OU is whenever he got a silent commit, he would tweet out the eye emoji. So it's a little jab at them, kind of, we see you and we're aware. And I expect an absolute for real complaint to the NCAA about this. I mean, this is about as bad a tampering as it gets.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, it's certainly not the way you want to start it off. I don't know if you saw the other tweet, but Lincoln Riley came out and said that in an interview that USC was going to be the mecca of college football. Right. Yeah. And then one of his former players responded like, you literally just told us that Thursday.
Yeah. And Isaiah Thomas, one of the leaders on that team, said, you told us that last week.
Right. You told us that last week. And it's funny because that just goes to coach speak. Right. And it's hilarious. I used to see it all the time. Right. I'll never forget. I went to a charity event with Urban Meyer before fall camp started. Right. It was in the morning. Him, myself, and I think his DFO went. To kind of just, I don't know, it was a big time donor event, and he had to speak, right? He mm-hmm. got up in front of this group, and 5 minutes in, I'm sitting there like, is he talking to like these accountants and like shit like that? Or is he talking to a football team? Because he's talking about like culture and maximum effort and all that, you know, 4 to 6, you know,
just 4 to 6, A to B.
Yeah. When I needed you the most, you gave me your very best and all that shit. I'm like, this fucking guy over here in HR is looking at him like, what the hell is going on right now? And it's funny because they just have this like, this speech in their mind, like daily, that they work on, and they can't help it. And then when they get in front of the team, guess what? We had a team meeting that night, same speech. He gave the Cardinal health and the Ohio State Buckeyes. And it's like, it's coach speak, right? It's their culture. It's their program. Lincoln Riley just like has this vision in his mind that his program is going to become the mecca of college football. So obviously he told that to Oklahoma last week. Well, then he gets the USC job. And what's he going to say? We're going to make this the mecca of college football just because that's in his mind what his program's goal is. But it is hilarious that he got called out.
It is like, it's like a default button. Like, I mean, I've done a lot of charity events too. Just kind of, and you can tell when people have been former coaches, I mean, maybe not as much as Urban, but kind of like the fallback on the default words, like they expect these accountants or doctors to like rip off their suit sleeves and like ready to go to war for them. But no, it's about, opening that good old checkbook for stuff like that. But no, you like Lincoln Riley a lot. He's going to use that terminology obviously because that's a vision for himself. But on the flip side, it's already begun. Like, they already got the 5-star kid who was the number one quarterback in the country committed there. He was committed to OU. And he's probably going to get everybody in the state of California, and it may end up being the mecca of out West. And it's crazy because Oklahoma basically gave itself the death penalty by doing that little shady backroom deal to go to the SEC. That's why this happened. Right. Lincoln Riley wanted no parts of the SEC, which I don't blame him. And because of that, Oklahoma has been given, I mean, they are the new Mizzou now.
Well, I mean, they're in danger of becoming it, right? I'm not ready to say, I mean, they're far more talented than Missouri. They have a much better.
Well, I'm an overreactor, so leave me alone. They're the new Mizzou.
Well, that's fine if that's what you want to say. I'm not here ready to say that yet, but they are definitely, you know, going into shark infested waters, and they just lost, they just lost their captain, their leader, and a lot of players. I mean, they got players jumping in the portal. They got recruits jumping ship, and it's only going to get worse. And they need to, I know they have Bob Stoops, but that's like having grandpa come in, right? It's like your parents get divorced, your dad leaves the family, and your grandpa walks in. It's like, yeah, I get it. Like, it's better than nothing, but that's still grandpa. Like, that's not my dad. You know what I mean? and that's what recruits are looking at it. Like, yeah, Bob Stoops, we know about him. He'll be there, but he's not going to be the coach. Mm-hmm. Like, who's going to be the coach? That's why they need to move fast. Like, this goes to a point that Jeremy Foley, the longtime athletic director at Florida, once told me, just kind of in a conversation. I was like, I was just asking about the hiring process. Cause you know, I mean, I was a young coach and I was like, I just want to learn the industry. And I was like, what do you like? What are the steps? Like, if you fire a coach or if a coach leaves, like, what do you do to figure out who you want? And he was like, you don't figure out who you want when a coach leaves. He was like, the number one thing an athletic director needs to have is a short list at all times that they work on every week, that if something, because even if things are going well, you're Nick Saban in Alabama, he could retire. Ryan Day could go to the Bears, right? Gene Smith has a list right now that if Ryan left, or just, you know, what if he maybe just decided, I'm done, I don't want to coach anymore, I got enough money. You don't know what's going to happen. It's not like you foresee firing a guy. Like, Oklahoma's AD should have a list, right? And the minute that this Lincoln Riley shit happened, boom, start firing on the list, start making contacts, and you could get that done in 2 days. Yep. If you wanted to. You're Oklahoma, right? So I don't know if it's, I'm not ready to say it's a failure by their athletic department, but if he wasn't prepared for this before it happened, he's a bad AD.
It looks like he got caught with his pants down. Like, that's what it looks and feels like.
Well, that's what can happen when things are going well, right? You're complacent, you're happy, you're like, Lincoln Riley's awesome, he's never leaving. And then boom, this happens, and it's like, you really fucked up.
Yeah. For sure. And this looks bad. I am curious to see how much the OU compliance wants to start snitching. But on the flip side, they gotta find a head coach, like you said yesterday, because they're going to shark infested waters, and they have a cut, and they are bleeding. So I am really curious to see. I do want to talk about the other coaching almost quote unquote destination job. I mean, now what's a destination job? Because people are leaving left and right. We did talk Notre Dame a little bit yesterday. I thought they should have made a hard push at Jeff Hafley. I don't know if they did or if BC wanted to get ahead of it. But Jeff Hafley, who's a hell of a football coach and is a rising star for sure. Kind of a sleeping giant in my eyes, got that 5-year extension. But Notre Dame doesn't have a head coach. They're looking like they could be a playoff team, but they don't. Yeah, they don't have a head coach, and they've kind of said that they don't want to hire an interim. What are they doing, Zach? What's the risk of hiring an interim coach?
There's no risk, and I mentioned it before. I think the only risk is there's this unwarranted movement for Marcus Freeman to get these jobs for some reason, and I can't understand it. Again, not that he's not a great coach, but he's not worthy yet. Mm-hmm. And I think the problem is if they give Marcus Freeman the interim tag, right, and he goes out and wins a playoff game, ooh, you talk about heat from boosters, heat from the board, heat from father, whatever his name is at Notre Dame now. I mean, it's one of those things. It's almost like I talked about on my show with Dan Mullen, where if you don't fire him before his last four games, he could rattle off four wins. And then all of a sudden everyone's like, I kind of like Dan. He's got momentum. He's, you know what? You got to make sure you avoid that. If that's not the move you want to make, if they name Marcus Freeman the interim head coach and he wins a playoff game and then loses in the national championship game, you know, do you want him to be the head coach? Like Brian Kelly's program that he kept alive won one game. Is that warranting him to become the head coach at Notre Dame? Probably not. But so I think that's why they're doing it. Now it is a huge problem. Huge problem. You have to have a captain, right? Mm-hmm. You have to have a chief. You have to. And if you don't, like I said earlier on one of the shows this week, I don't know how you resolve anything or make decisions, practice plans. Like there's so much that you need one voice to. I mean, is it going to be a democracy? Like there's 10 coaches. What if it's a five to five vote? You know what I mean? Like how are you going to decide things and make decisions without someone, you know, steering the boat? I don't understand it. I don't know how they're going to do it. And I think it's very problematic. I honestly think also that looks like it's more unstable than it already was going to be in the committee's mind.
It's Notre Dame is in the trickiest spot. Because they are, you know, kind of in the middle of a title push, having their coach leave is such a gut punch. And then, you know, you've expressed the risk of like hiring an interim, but at the same time, like their number one or the favorite for that job, you think would be Fickell, but I don't think Fickell's going to leave Cincinnati in the middle of a playoff push, and so he's going to probably ask Notre Dame to wait till after the playoffs and then come talk to him. So that is a problem for Notre Dame. There's really not a candidate there that's a home run if you act super quickly. And then the kind of the guy you want is a really stand up guy and isn't someone who's going to leave like Brian Kelly in the middle of a push. So what do you do?
Well, in my opinion, if their move is Luke Fickell, right? Mm-hmm. If that is the move, they don't need to talk to him. All this shit about wait till after the season, that's all just when are you going to officially hire him? So if they're going to hire Luke Fickell through his agent, they can find out if he's going to take the job. Obviously, pending a negotiation on salary and stuff like that. But if that's the move, then the one guy you know is getting retained at Notre Dame is Marcus Freeman. I mean, he played for Luke. He was Luke's D coordinator. That's how he got to Notre Dame, Luke's defense. Like, so that guy's getting retained. So why not hand him the keys and let him do the recruiting, run the playoff and bowl game
prep
everything, right? Why not let him hold it all together until after Cincinnati season's over? Because if you don't, right now what they're doing, I mean, there's no interim head coach. None of these coaches know if they have a job next year at Notre Dame. I'm sure some of them are probably going to go to LSU. It's just a complete disaster. And if you don't have someone holding it together, I don't care when you hire Luke Fickell. He just missed out on a whole class and a bunch of kids jumping in the portal. He's not there to patch up the leaks. The program's going to take a major dive before he has to build it back up. Like, you're going to lose so much by not doing it this way. I don't know what they're thinking, but it's Notre Dame. They're the NCAA version of a college program, right? They're just fucking stupid. They're dumb. They're arrogant. They don't know what they're doing. All they care about is Father Jack or whatever the stupid ass his name is. Like, it's all they care about, the diocese and shit like that. Like, they don't care about running a program, doing what they should do, doing what's right. Like, they're completely fucking clueless.
Yeah, and I've given my kind of past work, I've done a lot of work with diocese and people like that. And it is a headache and a half because they think they are so much, no matter what room they walk into, at least the people I've worked with, they've all felt like they are the smartest, and they give us kind of this elitist deal. And so sometimes it does get tricky for the athlete side of it, just because, I mean, that is kind of a different dangerous world. But Zach, what else they're doing is they are leaving the door open for someone else, cough, cough, Ohio State, if they want Freeman to possibly go get him. And I think that's the big thing. If Notre Dame doesn't act now, there is a little bit of smoke out there, maybe a little bit more than just smoke, definitely interest from both sides in Marcus Freeman being the next defensive coordinator at Ohio State. Like it or not, what Notre Dame is doing is risking losing one of the young stars of their staff by not making this move.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of conversation about him, but here's the reality. I know people love Marcus Freeman, and mm-hmm. and he's a former player. I get that. Really, really, that is a strong point, especially when you look at what Brian Hartline's done, Luke Fickell, yeah. Mike Vrabel. I mean, that is a very positive attribute of a coach, right? He's also done a good job with their defenses. Now, I will say, I've watched Notre Dame a bunch this year. I haven't studied them intently, and maybe I will for tomorrow's show and just attack this Marcus Freeman thing. And maybe I'm wrong, but
We just want to know if they trigger, Zach.
Yeah, that's all I give a fuck about. Like, are you going to have guys actually trigger and tackle guys at the line of scrimmage? If you do that, I mean, shit, there's a great D coordinator over here at Olentangy High School that they at least do that. Or get Jalen Holmes' high school coach who just zero blitzed every single play and won a state championship. Like you know what I mean? Like, let's just get some aggression. Yeah, no, but sure. I mean, you look you watch Notre Dame's defense, and I think they're a very average defense. Above right. average. That's not fair. They're an above average defense, but they're not doing anything that I look at and I'm like, wow. Like, this defense is legit. Guy. Like, right. when you look at what Wisconsin's defense looks like, you look at Auburn, what I watched Auburn's defense do against Alabama, Georgia's defense all year, right? Even Ole Miss's defense, I'm impressed with what they do. They aren't great mainly because of personnel, honestly, and the style of offense they go against every day. But I'm impressed with the scheme. I'm impressed with how well coached guys are. And Notre Dame is just kind of, you know, I'd say middle of that upper echelon. They're not at the top of the top. I mean, they're the 42nd rush defense in the country, 25th passing defense. They have created a lot of sacks. But the other problem is, you look at who Notre Dame played in the month of November. It is garbage. I mean, complete garbage. Like, so you got to take that into account in some form or fashion, right? I mean, just to go out, Stanford awful, Georgia Tech awful, Virginia awful, Navy can't throw the ball the length of your dick. I mean, it's just... North Carolina was down this year, right? Like, I don't know who they played. Southern Cal stinks. Virginia Tech just fired their coach. The only team they played, right, in the last 9 games was Cincinnati, and they lost.
They got bent over and whooped by them.
Yeah, so. Right. And so it's like, I don't see it.
I think Marcus Freeman's stock was actually higher at the end of last season at Cincinnati.
Oh, 100%.
So I think it's interesting that, you know, I get Ohio State people, you know, wanting him badly. But that brings me to my next point. I don't think it's purely because of scheme, because I think, like, in terms of, like, being a defensive coach, I think that Durkin's better. I think Durkin, you know, having to plan to stop the Lane Kiffin offense, which, say what you want about Lane Kiffin, he's a really strong offensive mind. And I think guys going up against that in practice and scheming for that is helpful. And I think Durkin is obviously experienced. I think he was kind of a rising star in the coaching world until obviously the whole Maryland situation happened. And I think he is definitely a better coach right now. The thing about Marcus Freeman that I think draws a lot of people is the recruiting prowess. And I want to talk to you about that. Is recruiting prowess more important than the ability to scheme and the ability to teach, Zach?
Is it what now?
Is it more important? Because, I mean, people see the recruits kind of he's taken from the state of Ohio, the Vernon kid who I know Ohio State really wanted, and just the overall ability to recruit, I think is kind of what catches, like, the casual fans' attention, because you see kind of that national recruiters list and you see his name up there with Hartline because he's able to pull 4 and 5 stars out of Ohio, guys that Ohio State wanted.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's a huge part of it, right? The name of the game is recruiting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you got to really know, and I told you, Chris, off air, I haven't followed recruiting like I probably should, and this, you're going to help me, because this offseason I'm going to do it. But you really got to dive into why. Like, why did he get those kids? Like, did he just have his hooks into kids and into coaches and really well connected and beat an Ohio State coach on a kid? Because there's times, like, Alabama beat us on a kid named Derek Keefe from Cincinnati, right? They didn't beat us. I didn't recruit him hardly. I mean, I stayed in touch with him because he was the best receiver in Ohio, but he wasn't. I didn't think he was good enough. But everyone's like, oh, Alabama goes into Ohio, beats Zach Smith on the top receiver in Ohio. I'm like, no, they didn't. Like, that's not what happened. They didn't beat me on that kid. They beat me on Jerry Jeudy. They didn't beat me on Derek Keefe. And guess what? He never played it down. And that's not a knock on him, but I was right. He probably should have went to like a Michigan State or an Indiana. That's where I thought he fit. And Alabama took him mainly to poke Urban. And it's like, oh, Alabama beat Urban on this kid. It's like, no, they didn't. So, you know, was you really got to know that.
Was Urban pissed about that?
Kind of. But and like every time he – like that was one of the ones that I used to bite back at him. He would get like pissed at me. Like he would read, what'd he do? Every morning Urban would walk in the office and he would get there at like, you know, 6 a.m. and he would pull out his iPad and he'd go through like Rivals or 247 Sports and just read articles, right, to see what's out there. Mm-hmm. And when he did that, he'd read like headlines like that and he'd come in livid into my office. And I'm like, whoa, how are you getting pissed? Because some fucking Steve Wilfong pencil pushing douchebag wrote an article and you're going to sit here and be like, how do we let this happen? I'm like, coach, he's not good enough to play here. Did you want me to bring in players that Steve Wilfong says are good that are not good enough to play here just to make headlines look better? I'm confused, my job. Mm-hmm. And he would be like, no, you're right. But shit pisses me off. Like I bring him back to reality, but it's like, so I got to know the story. You know, I got to know the kid, right? And it's like the kid Caden Saunders here in Columbus that's going to Penn State.
Yeah, you said that when that Alabama offer came out, that if you were Ohio State, you would tell him to go commit to Alabama right now and see if they took it.
Yeah, because they love to do that. Now, that being said, Caden Saunders is talented as shit. I've worked with him a couple times. I think he's a player. He is fast. Now, I do agree with Ohio State's assessment that I think the kid might be a first-round corner. I'm not saying he can't play receiver. He certainly can, but I think his money is – and if he goes to Alabama, I don't give a fuck what they told him. They are pulling a Trayvon Diggs on his ass and switching him to corner his second day on campus. So, I mean – I guess shame on Ohio State for being honest with the kid, but and you know what? He'll have a great career at Penn State, so who cares? But it's like that. Did Penn State beat Ohio State on a Columbus kid and Caden Saunders? Well, yeah, kinda, because they're letting him play receiver and telling him to play receiver. But Ohio State obviously could have played the game differently and maybe not have lost that kid. Yeah. But so every story has a story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just interesting because kind of the perception out there is that Marcus Freeman has been owning Ohio State on the recruiting trail. And I think that's kind of what makes him attractive. I do think there are better, head coaching DC options out there, but what Notre Dame is doing is leaving themselves vulnerable to kind of, you know, the rising star on their staff getting snatched up by a bigger place if they don't kind of act quickly, or unless maybe they know they have Fickell in the bag afterwards. And that's why. But at the same time, you still should make him the interim head coach. So you know it's a tricky spot. I know people are going to want to talk about this. Did you dig into the dream hire stuff, or do you want to wait a little bit on those?
No, I want to do that after the championship. Let's do that Monday or Tuesday. Absolutely. Because I really want to. I mean, the biggest thing, because a bunch of people have asked me, like, who would you bring in as a D coordinator? And we're working at it.
Like, for people who don't know, like, Zach and I both kind of have our own modes of work and operation. I'm obviously not an expert in this kind of thing, but I dig into it too in kind of a different way. And I sink my teeth in and try to find, you know, candidates. But this is not a process to. Like, people assume that kind of as soon as we lost to Michigan, that me and you would just shoot back and have like a full new staff ready. Like, it takes time. It's hard to do, which is why not a lot of schools are successful with it.
Yeah. And so I need to look, because my biggest thing is people say all the time, well, bring in Corey Raymond. It's like, what? I mean, that guy is like ingrained in Louisiana. Like, you ain't getting Corey Raymond. I don't care. Yeah. Okay. Sounds good. Like, I would really want to look at, all right, here's who I think would be great hires. And would they come? Like, okay, let's go get Dan Lanning from Georgia. Okay, that fucking guy's not coming. You know what I mean? Like, you could say that. That's why I'm so hung up on DJ Durkin, because I know what type of coach he is, and I know what type of defensive mind he is, and he's an Ohio guy from Youngstown, played at Bowling Green. He's an Urban guy. Like, the fit is there. That's why I won't stop talking about him. But there's other candidates out there. So I'll dive into it, and maybe next week we'll work on a dream list, a dream staff, my dream staff, who I would hire if if I got the job at Ohio State.
And we're going to try to keep it, like you said, pretty realistic. I mean, we're not going to come out here and say, well, we think Bill Belichick should be the DC. Like, we're not going to build like that kind of lineup. It's going to be something that is attainable. And we might even, you know, fuck around and attach salaries to it to you know, competitor wise. But Zach Dog, that's all I have for today. The top four is out, and I'm sure we're going to dig into that a little bit more. We kind of have to reset and do more tape study on that too.
Yeah, for sure. The only other thing I do want to talk about real quick is I'm sure people saw it in the news. What I talked about, someone who could leave Ohio State just announced that he is not going to leave Ohio State. Tony Alford turned down a job with Brian Kelly at LSU. And I did think it was funny that Brian Kelly contacted Tony Alford and his own coaches didn't know he was taking the LSU job. Like, just, it's just hilarious how some of these coaches work. But I think we
alluded to that yesterday. Kind of like you kind of painted the picture, and we had a couple text messages back.
Well,
and forth.
You know, when
I mean, go ahead and tell that story. I mean, you got the call from Tony. What were you thinking?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I never I've said it 100 times. I never will put. I'm not here to break news. I could give two shits if we ever break a story ever. I'm not here for it. It's not why we're doing this, and I certainly will never leverage a friendship to break fucking news. That's stupid.
Right.
I got a phone call from Tony that he. You know, that he had this opportunity, and what did I think about it? And just, we just talked about it just because he's a good friend of mine. He wasn't really asking for advice, but
yeah,
he was just, we just talked about it, whatever. So that's when I found out Brian Kelly was leaving Notre Dame. And I was like, at first I was like, get the fuck out of here. Brian Kelly's not taking the LSU job. Like, I thought he was not full of shit, but I was like, man, get out of here. But yeah, I think Tony is a guy that everyone needs to keep an eye on because he's done a great job, right? Ezekiel Elliott, J.K. Dobbins, Travion Henderson, like what he's done with running backs, even, you know, going back to his time at Notre Dame. And then he's smart as shit. He recruits really well. He presents really well. He's great with, you know, I don't know how you say it. He's great with white families and black families, whatever. I don't care about political correctness. No, dude, I mean, yeah, he's great. He's just excellent.
He's great. He's great with the homies.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean, I'm going to be honest, and we could go down this path. I worked with a guy named Kenny Carter, black guy, running back coach, fucking awful with black families, and it blew my fucking mind. But was great with these little like suburban white families, and I'm like, what the fuck? Like, this doesn't make sense. But so I've been around. You know, everyone's different. Race has nothing to do with it, but. But Tony's great. I'm saying he's just great with everyone. I've also been around coaches that you know, they can only talk to certain demographics. But Tony's excellent. And so I think the only reason why he would have even considered LSU is because he wants to be a head coach one day, and he will be a great head coach when he is one. And that would have been one. ADs and search firms get their dick hard over SEC experience. They just do. Even though, like I told him, the Ohio State job is better than the LSU job. But a search firm would love to see Ohio State and LSU on a resume, right? Never mind the fact that another year at Ohio State will make you a better coach than if you go to LSU. Like, it's just, it looks cuter, right? It's sexier. Yeah. I've talked about it a bunch. These hires a lot of times are about how sexy they are. And it's sexy to say the guy coached at Notre Dame, Ohio State and LSU, not just Notre Dame and Ohio State. Right. And then I also think he would have gotten a title. So we'll see what Ryan does with titles and all that stuff. At the end of the day, titles are bullshit, but it looks sexier. He's a run game coordinator. What does that mean? Nothing. but at least he's got a title. It does matter. It does matter in the grand scheme of, you know, your career. So really, really glad. And a Buckeye fan should be really glad. Tony Alford is going to remain a Buckeye. And, you know, until his time comes where he gets to go lead a program, probably the Colorado State Rams.
Yeah, I think you kind of nailed all that head on. I do kind of want to close with, first of all, you know, I'm kind of waiting. I'm on a Fry watch waiting for Buddy to get off the plane to be the new, you know, the new O-line coach. We'll see how soon that happens. And then also, dude, shout out to the fucking Ohio State Hoops team, underdogs at home. And getting a win over number one Duke, and they said, you know, fuck the Coach K farewell tour. We do not care. We are here to ball. I went to bed at halftime. I thought it was over. And, you know, I woke up this morning, you know, got a couple texts back from my guy who's a Michigan fan who actually ran the shot clock. And he said he couldn't believe it. It was like Chris Holtman, you know, put a spell on that Duke team. I went and watched it back.
Yeah, they couldn't score.
They went ice cold. That's what a real defense looks like, and I love it. And they got it done. EJ with absolute ice in his veins. And he's on his way to kind of being an Ohio State hoops legend. And I fucking love it.
Chuck Liddell, man. Chuck Liddell. He couldn't make a free throw at the beginning of the game. I know that much. But But he's a good player. It was going to be a fun team to watch. I mean, they obviously had that that fuck up early in the year against who I don't remember who it was. Doesn't matter. But yeah, taking down Duke. That's shout out to them Bucks, man. The hardwood.
Oh, shucks. Go Bucks. We are officially a basketball school. Jokes aside, Zach, I have nothing left. Do you have anything else?
No, I'm good to go. Menace out.
Menace out.
Menace Nation, it's Menace morning time.
Wake 'em up. I don't do the most, but I do a lot. Tryna hide from the camera. I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tip. So I'm drinking on egg today.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma put up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot the shot. I'm coming in.
I'ma take it to trial.